My name is Dario Hasenstab. I'm here with Walter Hagerts, and we are back with the Western Bubble podcast. Today, we're talking about the Epstein files, because we want to dabble in conspiracies, I assume. But hi, Walter. Why are we talking about the Epstein files? This is such a non-topic for us usually.
Hi, Dario. Well, you should really answer me, because if it were up to me, we would be talking now about Syria and Israel and Western approaches to the situation there. However, I understand that in this simplistic world, people are now really hyped up about Epstein and the situation with Trump. And, you know, it sells. People listen more when we choose these kinds of trendy topics, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, not to say that Syria is not a trendy topic, but for full transparency, I did not feel comfortable recording about Syria and Israel today, because I feel like I would need an additional 3 days of preparation, just because it's one of the more complex topics out there. As you said, the Epstein files are one of the simpler topics, right? One way you can easily choose black or white. You're either a pedophile or not.
Well, yeah, and also just at an analytical level, because that's the narrative that is certainly pushed for by the MAGA crowd. But at some level, it really is about nothing particularly important, right? I mean, important for victims of Epstein, sure. And it's interesting to see who was on the list, sure, but it's going to be very hard to actually come up with any concrete, detailed evidence of actual abuse based on these documents. You know, the fact that someone flew to the island doesn't mean much yet in itself. So it's basically, in many ways, a non-issue that gets blown out of all proportion because of the MAGA crowd turning against Trump. And that makes it politically interesting. The fact that they turn against Trump might be interesting to analyze from a psychological perspective. But beyond that, you know, in the bigger picture of things, with everything that has happened in the past 5 months, I would argue that this is a very small, small issue that gets way too much attention.
Hmm. At the risk that someone doesn't know what we're talking about, I do want to take a step back and quickly talk about the topic overall. So we're talking about Jeffrey Epstein. One of those like influential Americans who already very early on in his life, or in my life, in 2005, was kind of convicted, it started in 2005, and in 2008 he was kind of convicted for basically child prostitution, right? That he had kind of sexually abused and then trafficked a 14-year-old girl, and then suddenly it came out that more and more girls were involved in this. So everyone kind of knew that this is a dodgy guy. And then in 2019, he was arrested again and put in jail because of what they called, what they now call like the Epstein Island, right? Where he basically had an island where apparently it's kind of difficult to see what's real information, what's believed information. But that it was like, what we know is that it was this island. He constantly held his sex parties there, right, with underage girls. So we're talking 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, right, maybe also a bit older, kind of flown there. And then also others, right? So he would invite people to join. And that's what this whole thing is about, right? That there might be a list or not, or there might be some records of what type of people have been on this island and therefore engaged in sex with minors, particularly enforced sex with minors, so human trafficking, sexual abuse, sexual exploitation. And that's, I think, what this whole topic is about. And then that was intensified when a month into his arrest, Epstein was found dead in his cell from suicide, and that's kind of the facts. And from now on, all conspiracy theories, right? This is about how he died, who was on this island, who's trying to kind of protect whom, and so on.
Yeah, so it's not fully a fact that he committed suicide, but it's the most likely scenario. But immediately there were all kinds of accusations of that he had been murdered to keep him from testifying and naming his friends who also went to the island. Of course, look, from a victim perspective, this is an important topic. It is also an important topic to understand how certain circles within the establishment abuse their power in horrible ways. This is the horrible outcome of patriarchal abusive tendencies. All of that was important at the time. Now, when we fast forward to 2025, there is some interest in seeing what kind of evidence is out there, because we know there's something. This has been confirmed by various administrations, even the Trump administration. In the first Trump administration, Trump made it a big thing in his campaign process. There is some evidence out there. How much evidence, we don't know exactly, but there is quite a bit of evidence. And that could be interesting depending on what that evidence gives. But what it is not going to give, I suspect, I would be surprised, is all kinds of details about how either Donald Trump or Bill Clinton or anyone else committed crimes on the island. What is very likely to be the case is that it will give evidence of high-profile people flying to the island, which is embarrassing and could indicate very dodgy behavior. And it wouldn't surprise me that there are loads of high-profile men, especially, that have engaged in very high-profile, in very dodgy behavior. But there's not going to be hard evidence of that actual dodgy behavior, unless you argue that just flying to the island is enough itself to have committed a crime, which I don't think is a case you can make. So we're basically conflating a lot of innuendo with politics and with our own kind of moral outrage about the existence of the island. And it's not going to lead to anything particularly big in terms of criminal investigations, I would think. The only thing that it does is it sort of satisfies our needs to throw the elites out in the open, right? And to say, hey, you all are, we're way too close to Epstein, and how come? And please explain why you were so close to him. Please explain why you went to the island that often. Yeah, that's interesting, sure, but there are much bigger fish to fry in the world today. And the fact that it gets so much attention basically shows something much deeper about our psychology and our inability to focus on complex issues and our desire to basically divide the world into right and wrong, or in this case, the righteous crowd versus the pedophiles, right? And I don't think it's helpful.
See, because this topic, I mean, if you can also look at this topic from a very complex standpoint, right? So you can ask yourself, like, we can look into power structures, right? How is it that very powerful people can abuse their power, and most importantly, others are covering them, right? There's also there's the other examples, right? There's also the example of the rapper P. Diddy, right? Who apparently also did some very dodgy things, and then kind of people kind of covering for them. And I would also not be surprised if these people want to keep celebrities close to them, right? To kind of make sure that they are appearing like they're powerful and cool, and that no one ever looks into them. So I think you could look into power structures, power dynamics, right? How is it that kind of the elites can do things like this, and that others are covering for them? You can also ask questions, right, about the like psychological phenomena that kind of go on within these men, of why do they want to have sex with like 14-year-olds, right, or 15-year-olds? So you can look into that. There is a lot of very complex conversations I think you can have about this topic, but in the end, the one we focus on is the very simplistic one of who was on the island and who's a pedophile here, right? Which, particularly when it comes to the MAGA crowd, seems to be very close to their heart, because I remember still the Pizzagate, right? When all these conspiracies were spread about Hillary Clinton operating an international sex trafficking ring and basically sucking out children's blood out of the basement of a DC-based pizza place.
And you're absolutely right here. So we should talk about the MAGA crowd and what drives them here. But these very important conversations about power structures can already be had, because we know that they exist, right? We don't need the Epstein files to confirm that they exist. We know that the island existed. We know that at least Epstein already, because he was, you know, and his, what was her name? Ghislaine Maxwell. She's been convicted. We know that the basic truth is out there about what happened. Not exactly all the details, not exactly who went to the island, but those power structures exist. They are abusive. They were abusive in the case of Epstein. those kinds of conversations about where does this come from? How can we stop it? Is there any way to, to hold people to account? Those are conversations that we can already have now. The only thing that could come out of the Epstein files itself is not so much this conversation. It is about who is guilty and who isn't. And I would be amazed if there's actual hard criminal evidence, right? If you can find criminal evidence against specific people, then okay, great, amazing. Please go after them. Please arrest them. If it's Bill Clinton, if it's Donald Trump, whoever it is, do it. Wonderful. But I don't think that there will be that criminal evidence. How could it? And so it becomes a thing of shaming and blaming without hard evidence. And I don't think that's particularly interesting. We should just have these conversations in general about the patriarchy and about these power structures that you describe. And let the authorities deal with criminal investigations if they can find them. The MAGA crowd, though, is very interesting, right? How you're right to mention Hillary Clinton. It's fascinating how they take these certain positions and then anchor themselves to it and go after anyone who opposes their quest for righteous justice, basically.
I mean, it's also something that everyone, I think, will and can agree on if it's proven, right? So I don't think there's, I at least hope there's nobody out there who would defend a convicted pedophile, right? So someone who wanted to or had sex with a 5, 6, 7, 10-year-old, right? So it's in that sense, I'm with the MAGA crowd on the black and white thinking. I do not want to have anything to do with them. I think they should be locked up for a considerable amount of time and then at least be put into some psychological therapy because that's what they need, right? Because they have that mental illness. And that's it's a very easy and comfortable blanket statement to throw onto someone.
Yeah, I mean, it's always dangerous if you are seen to be siding with dodgy people. But I would take a slightly more nuanced approach in the sense, not in the sense of criminal acts. The moment someone abuses a child, a minor, of any age, by the way, I think that is an act that needs to be punished, that is deeply immoral, that needs to there needs to be consequences to it. I do think that if it's about actual pedophilia, like the attraction to children, that is a mental illness, and we should differentiate towards people who have those feelings and people who actually act on those feelings. The moment you act on it, you are a criminal and you need to... If you have those feelings, I would like those people to go to be able to feel secure enough and to feel comfortable enough to go to a doctor, to go to the system and say, I've got a problem. I have these feelings. I don't want to have them. How can I deal with them? I'd rather have them be dealt with before they commit a crime than after commit a crime. And so therefore, with our language, we have to be a little bit careful because if we just say, the moment you have those feelings, you're a monster, then they're going to hide and they're going to behave like a monster, right? Whereas if you say, okay, if you have those feelings here, is the therapist, you need to go through rigorous therapy and we need to monitor you to make sure that you don't do anything dodgy in the future, that would be a much more productive approach. But you're right to point out here the ages, because in some ways we kind of need a new word for what the Epstein Island is about, right? And which unfortunately a lot of patriarchal power abuse is about. It's not about the attraction to the childlike qualities of a 5-year-old or a 10-year-old, which is pedophilia. It is about basically being attracted to young women, sometimes men, but typically women that are underage, but it is not the same as medical pedophilia. And so by amalgamating that into one term and not separating it, it becomes such a simplistic black and white thing, right? Technically, if you go down this line, then a 19-year-old having sex with a 17-year-old engages in pedophilia. Well, I don't think that is useful, right? We need some other term for that. We need a term for incredibly dodgy criminal 60-year-old man sleeping with a 15-year-old girl. But I just, let's call it something that is more appropriate rather than just calling them pedophiles.
I mean, maybe our listeners are more informed on this, right? And do know a term like that. I mean, I regularly discover, any philias or phobias or whatever, right? So it might exist already, but I do think it's also useful to differentiate between that. I mean, not making it any less horrible.
Then it doesn't take any moral judgment away from it, right? It's just as bad. It's horrifying. I mean, it also gives me the creeps if you read about a billionaire dating a 22-year-old. I think that is, you know, it's not illegal, but it's incredibly, incredibly dodgy. So basically, it's not about being less or more upset about it. It is just about analyzing what is going on, right? And there's a very significant difference between a man being attracted to a 5-year-old or a man being attracted to a 15 or 16-year-old. It's a different problem. It's both an enormous problem. It is both something that should be investigated. And if it happens, they are criminals and they should be prosecuted. No doubt about it. But if we all throw it into a simplistic black and white, it's all the same kind of thing, we lose our ability to understand the reality of what we see in front of us. A little bit like the way that people have been using genocide and for anything. Like genocide, the moment you kill a lot of people, it's genocide. No, not quite. Genocide has a specific meaning. And let's find another word for that other thing that's happening. Ethnic cleansing or whatever it is that we observe in front of us, right?
So talking about billionaires who are attracted to 16-year-old girls, let's talk about Donald Trump. Because he's one of the central players at the moment, right? Why this topic is becoming so big? Because this happened back in 2019 and it's only becoming an issue now. And one of the reasons why it's becoming an issue is because he partly campaigned on this. And he partly said that, the deep state, the elites are hiding the Epstein files from you. The moment I get into office, I will release them. Why he didn't do it when he was in office the first time, that's still like a question that I haven't received an answer to yet. But all right, he campaigned on this, and particularly, right, a lot of his platform was influenced by that, right? Because he appeared on a lot of those broadcasts, right, those podcasts by some less intellectual men, maybe, who like to make incredibly complex things very easy. And there it was always a question, always a topic, right? Also from his crowd, also these right-wing MAGA influencers really drove this topic. And they actually started their administration by handing out big binders to some of these right-wing influencers with not very interesting information in there, basically publicly available information. But it was a platform that people ran on. And now, suddenly, Donald doesn't want to release the files. And that, of course, leads to a whole another level of conspiracy theories and actually a little bit the implosion of the MAGA movement, because, I mean, something we've seen before during the fight between Elon Musk and Donald Trump. That's also when Musk, for the first time, brought up that, Trump is in the files. And now we kind of see that further erosion of the bubble or explosion of the MAGA bubble, at least.
Yeah, so there are the two actors that are fascinating to analyze, Trump and the Trump administration and the MAGA crowd and how they work together or at the moment have a standoff against each other. It seems to me, and this is purely speculation, of course, that Trump, during the election campaign and even the early stages of his administration in January, assumed that it wouldn't be too bad for him because he made it a really big deal in his campaign. Like, of course, you know, well, he was asked once, are you going to release it? And then he was already, this was, I think, from December or November, and all of a sudden he became a little bit more iffy about it because he understood that he had won. But certainly in the election campaign, he made it a big deal. I'm going to expose all of it. I'm going to open it up because my movement wants that. Probably not realizing how it would be a problem for him personally. And then at some point, he must have actually seen the files and he must have thought, hang on, actually, this could be a real problem for me. I look like a sexual predator. I look, because he is, obviously, allegedly. I look like someone who...
you're saying, I disagree with the word alleged.
Yeah, no, I mean, just in case someone wants to sue us. I don't have the evidence in front of me, but I would be surprised if he's not. He must have seen the actual evidence there and he must have thought, okay, this cannot be released because this is going to be too problematic for him. And then he did an enormous U-turn. I think that's what happened from his perspective. Like when it was far away, when he wasn't president yet, it seemed like an easy thing to do. And now all of a sudden, he doesn't want to be exposed like that. That is the most obvious explanation in most likely scenario. Now, The manga crowd is interesting here because I think in some ways commentators don't really fully properly understand the manga crowd. I think the manga crowd at some level see themselves as deeply good, righteous people. Right?
They as everyone in life, right?
As almost everyone, except for the few sociopaths and psychopaths who don't care about righteousness and morality, who just, you know, live their lives as they do. But by far, the largest number of people around this world wake up in the morning thinking of themselves as good people. And the MAGA crowd feel that they're doing the right thing. And they cling on to Donald Trump as their leader, not so much because of the content that he provides, because he doesn't provide much content, but because of the symbolic nature of him and anti-establishment and that kind of thing. But more than anything, they cling to basic, moral, simplistic values. And one of those is the very hardcore, I'm not talking about, you know, having doubts about abortion or anything, but the hardcore pro-life position, like every day, thousands of babies are being murdered because of abortion, right? The people who just, which is, you know, that kind of position, like the Democrats are child murderers for allowing abortion to take place, which is, of course, an incredibly simplistic position, whereas the reality is much more complex and nuanced than that. And the same is with the Epstein files, because it allows them to identify as the easiest moral positive you can, anti-pedophilia. I'm an anti-pedophile. Well, good for you. So is everyone else who has, you know, I would like to think that even pedophiles are anti-pedophiles, right? We all understand that it's bad. We all understand that it's terrible. And so they cling to that and they say, I need to anchor myself to this. My identity is connected to being this crusader against pedophilia. And my leader will solve this problem. And then the moment that Trump, because of his self-interest, does this U-turn, all of a sudden they have this choice to make between their leader or their anchored identity. And they choose their anchored identity more than their leader. And all of a sudden, that leader becomes part of the establishment. The leader becomes part of the group that work with the devil. They're demonic. They are as evil as you can be, because how could you ever not want to expose pedophiles, right?
Before I directly respond to that, I quickly want to mention, because we haven't mentioned it yet, and I assume it's semi-public, like common knowledge, but the reason why we assume that Trump is worried about the Epstein files is because him and Epstein were somewhat friends, right? There's many pictures of them together. They've also talked about each other a lot, right? And so, I wouldn't be surprised if Donald Trump's name came up in these files simply because he's been around him, right? So that's the amount of knowledge we have on that part.
Indeed, and Trump is particularly notable there, but Epstein was like the perfect socialite at the time, right? He had so many contacts. He had an incredible network. And that's why I mentioned Bill Clinton as well. What do I know about whether Bill Clinton flew to the islands or not? But all these people were very closely connected to each other in the 90s and even before in the 80s. And we know this. Now, that doesn't mean that automatically Donald Trump or Bill Clinton actually did anything dodgy on the island or even went to the island. It is, but it's not a crazy idea that they did, right? That's the whole point here. And so it's vaguely interesting to see if they did, but that in itself is not enough evidence yet. I think the evidence about sexually predatory nature of Donald Trump is in any case very well established with respect to everything we know beyond Epstein, right? I mean, the cases against him, the tape from the bus where he talked about rather unpleasant terms about women and what he did to women. So I feel relatively comfortable taking that position about Trump, something that I would be a little bit more hesitant about with respect to other people such as Bill Clinton.
See, that was going to be my point when it comes to the MAGA crowd and kind of the mental gymnastics you have to go through, because you believe in yourself to be a good person, you believe that pedophilia is bad, and still you decide to ignore all the evidence about Donald Trump that he's just a terrible human being, that he has a terrible relationship to women, right? I mean, there's the language he used to talk about Ivanka, right, his daughter, when she was still very young, or even today. Then also just right, different kind of tapes. You mentioned the tape from the bus, right, where the famous grab him by the, no? You know, everyone knows what I'm talking about. And right, there's an overwhelming amount of evidence that Donald Trump is a sexual predator. That's the reason why I shook my head earlier when you said that, right? I believe there is enough evidence for me to conclude that Donald Trump is a sexual predator. And yet, at that point, it didn't bother the Trump crowd, right? It didn't bother them because, and he famously said, right, I could shoot someone on the street and these people would still celebrate for me. So I think what kind of happened here is partly, of course, the pedophilia, right, that is just their worldview, but also, and I think more importantly, right, the cult-like behavior they have against the deep state, against, right, the elites trying to cover things up. And Trump was always the guy who was going against the elites, what I think made him so particularly appealing to the MAGA crowd, right? Because he always stuck it to the man. And, you know, I mean, I always remember this part during the, I think it was the second debate between Trump and Hillary Clinton. Right when Trump was asked by the moderator about kind of like whether he has taken any tax loopholes, and he said, yes, of course I have. I would have been stupid not to. Just like all of Hillary's friends, right? Because she is the one who created them. And that was so powerful, and because it's really stuck in my mind. And I think that's kind of what speaks to the MAGA crowd. And now that he, for the first time, is the guy who is not releasing this, releasing that, right? Now that he's not putting sugar back in Coca-Cola, which that's the usual Trump things he does. But no, now for the first time, he's going against what they kind of believe in. And that's draining the swamp, going against the elites.
Yeah, and I would say it's more than just believe in, something that is fundamental for their self-image, the way they wake up in the morning, right? That very simplistic kind of fight. Now, what you just said is the conversation that the media should be having about these power structures. How is it that the Clinton children, and so I'm sorry to mention Clinton so much, but because it's such an obvious case here, the Clinton children were friends with the Trump's children. Do you know the answer? It's because they're all mixed together, unless it gets exposed or unless the political differences become too big. I would think that right now Hillary and Donald don't really speak anymore together, but in the 90s they absolutely did, and their children knew each other, socialized together. It is a very incestuous elite crowd. And there, by the way, the MAGA, even though they deal with it in a very simplistic and kind of destructive way, the MAGA crowd has a point. There is some kind of dodgy elitism and establishment dynamic going on with Jeff Bezos partying with Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia, and those kinds of things. It is a very scary world, and those are very important conversations to have. But we don't need the Epstein files to have those conversations, right? It's the Epstein files are just they feel like they satisfy our need to go after just individuals specifically, as if that one specific individual, that one Bill Clinton or that one Donald Trump is the problem, whereas it's a much bigger structural problem.
Well, and it's also, I think it fulfills our basic human need for gossip, for chisme, right? For kind of saying it. And I mean, conspiracy theories are nice to dabble in. I mean, so talking about this, not on a podcast, right? Talking about, oh, this is a conspiracy. But when you're sitting together with your friends at night, having a glass of wine, and you're like, oh, what's the craziest conspiracy theory you believe in, right? It's one of my favorite questions to ask in social circles because it's just fun, right? And everyone kind of treats it lightly. But when it comes to the whole Epstein thing, right? I mean, we briefly talked about his death, right? I mean, there is, and I asked you before the episode, I asked you, I was like, Boulder, do you believe that, right? Do you believe the story about his death? Because there's, of course, there's circumstantial evidence that could fill some gaps, right? That are left out there and that we could believe, oh, something dodgy happened. And I think the more powerful thing is that this supposed list hasn't been published yet, which means you can basically write your opponents on there, right? So that's what happened with the MAGA crowd. They said all these Democrats, and now actually that kind of the left-leaning side of the crowd has realized that Trump is on there. Suddenly they are very interested in the Epstein file, saying, oh, release them because we want to see the Donald on there, right? So it's easy. It's the reason why we watch stupid shows. Well, I don't, but why we watch stupid shows like Love Island, right? We kind of want to have that voyeuristic aspect of our lives and the need fulfilled.
Well, this also links back to some other episodes that we have had in the past couple of months. The fact, whatever gets released now, because when we're recording this now on Friday the 18th, of July, and Trump just announced that he does want to release some of the files under pressure from the MAGA crowd, right? But what is different now compared to, let's say, 10, 15 years ago, is that we really cannot trust anymore the information being given by the US government. So if you look at the War on Terror and George W. Bush, they did some very dodgy things, even criminal things, internally, legally. They broke the law a number of times. But when documents were produced by the Justice Department, you could generally still trust that those documents were truthful, at least to the best of their ability, because the Justice Department would be independent and would fulfill its duty in, you know, wherever the evidence led. Now, whatever gets released, if they do release anything, because Trump has just announced that they want them to, can't be trusted anymore because the whole system has been corrupted. And that leads to exactly these kinds of conspiracy theories, right? The moment that you say we cannot trust the authorities to honestly provide the information that they argue that they say they are providing, to honestly produce the documents that exist instead of altering those documents, unfairly redacting them, producing fake ones, the moment we cannot trust them to behave properly anymore is the moment that any conspiracy goes, because we no longer have a foundation of truth. We no longer know what is real or not. And that is a major change between 2005 and 2025. It is a major change in how we need to deal with US information coming out about these events. And that is incredibly scary. That's another really big conversation to have. How can we trust anything that it comes out of the US government at the moment?
Which goes back to another topic that we have been discussing at length in the past, is that good institutions are a little bit more important than good policies, right? Is that we need to be able to trust the courts, the division of power, the division of the church and state. We need to be able to trust the fact that I won't be cheated on with my tax returns, right? That if I put in a complaint against a government official, that it will be treated with fairly. Those are things that are really, really important, but those are also, unfortunately, the aspects that we've been criticizing a lot because they've been eroding.
But that requires a sophisticated understanding of what makes a society great, right? The sophisticated kind of understanding that, yes, you have your political views on whatever it is, even things that are so important as abortion, or I can understand that they're fundamental to you, but first, you need to have that respect for institutions, because if you don't have that respect for institutions, any discussion about abortion, any policy making about abortion falls flat. It becomes irrelevant. You need that framework at the foundation of society that works and that we can trust. And that is, again, where the MAGA crowd completely misunderstands what they're doing. It's not out of ill will, I believe, that all those millions of people carry the hats and support Trump until the Epstein situation, at least. It is simply that they don't understand the nuance, or they don't want to understand the nuance here, and that there is something more important than your will being done. There needs to be a well-functioning society at the core of that. And if you don't respect that well-functioning society, then your future is going to be damned. You're heading towards a very dark place, and everyone else as well. It's that kind of simplicity, though, that kind of explains, I think, also what you mentioned before about why the MAGA crowd accepted Trump's behavior and everything we know about his personality-wise with respect to women, his behavior towards, his unethical behavior towards all kinds of people. And now they don't accept his position on Epstein, namely that those issues were individual issues that were harder to label, right? Especially for them, if I think it's fair to say they come from a relatively patriarchal thought structure where there's already a kind of dodgy relationship with women. Whereas the liberal crowd, it's much clearer. This is like a red line. The moment you say this about women, you are signaling to me that you are acting in an evil manner, that there's something deeply wrong with you, right? The moment that Trump says A, B, and C, or does A, B, and C, then we know from a liberal perspective that there's something deeply wrong. For the MAGA crowd, it's not that simple. It's not that black and white in that sense. But they can cling on to the pedophilia versus the establishment, because that is very simple, very easy to understand, and doesn't require patriarchy. In patriarchy, pedophilia is bad as well, right? It doesn't require your inherent cultural social biases to understand that there's something deeply evil about this. And that makes me really worried, because that leads to a very, very ill-equipped society to actually hold power to account, if we just think in black and white, simplistic terms.
Well, but it is unfortunately becoming the norm. Right. Whenever we talk about any of the topics, let's say particularly of the last 6 months, it's never about, okay, what are the underlying factors that within Israeli society that allow the government to take the drastic actions that it's taking? No, it's about, is this a genocide or is this ethnic cleansing, or who's the really bad guy and who do I shout at today? Or here with the Epstein files, it's the same with the Big Beautiful Bill. Right, where it's also not, it's more about the individual issue of this is going to be really bad for people and this guy is at fault, instead of no, this is like, this shows you that in fact there's no opposition to this, right? It's just bad policy making and so on. We've just, as a society, particularly Western societies, have become a little bit too used to the fact that we no longer talk about complex issues. We talk about this, right? We talk about the conspiracy theories. We talk about who's the bad guy, who's the good guy, and which side am I on? That's the most important conversation we're having at the moment.
Right, which tribe do you belong to? And I mean, all those issues are complex by themselves, but we don't treat it with nuance. We don't treat it with sophistication, right? So basically, you can in this whole entire conversation, you can hear the moment. Let's say that tomorrow the list is published and there are 100 names on there. Then immediately those 100 names will be labeled pedophiles, even though that is an insane claim to make. Just flying to the island doesn't mean that you did anything yet, right? But we don't deal with it with any nuance. We divide the world in good versus evil, in our tribe versus the other tribe. And so the Hillary Clinton pizza ring, that was a thing in 2016, insane, of course, for any rational person. That story doesn't make any sense, but once again, it is very comforting to those people, because it says, we are the good guys, we are against pedophilia, and Hillary Clinton is for pedophilia, and she actively encourages it. It makes their lives so much simpler, and it's important to them, because if they can't cling on to that, they would have to embrace a complexity or a nuance or a sophistication that they aren't willing and sometimes aren't able to actually embrace.
I mean, this goes always a little bit back to, I think it was episode 34 or 35, the listeners are going to have to double check on this, where we talked about conspiracy theories, right? And we talked about it in the connection with externalizing responsibility. Right? And that's obviously a big part of this. So I do recommend to listeners, in case you haven't, to go back to that episode. It was a long time ago, so please forgive us. We weren't as sharp as we are today. But I think it was one of the more important episodes that we did, right? Because, of course, conspiracy theories make it so easy. It's the elite, those pedophile elites, because they are eating pizza in Washington, D.C. That's the reason why here in my home, the school system isn't working, and there is no public transportation, and so on and so forth, right? That's the reason why my life is miserable.
Indeed. And he, there's no way to actually tell people, hang on, there's a sophistication and nuance, because the moment you tell them that is to say, oh, so you're now defending them, you're defending the evil people, you're defending those who, and you say, no, it's a little bit more complex. And I think the message in general that evil exists, I mean, depends again on your definition of evil, but I would hope that every reasonable person understands that abuse, specifically sexual abuse, for example, but there are all kinds of other abuses as well, is an evil act. It is destructive. It is something that we can all agree on is horrible. But that doesn't mean that we can just turn that person committing the act or being responsible for that act into a monster. Because then the whole world becomes one of monsters and a very few pure souls who never do anything wrong. In reality, what you need to do is say, this is a horrific act. And if there's criminal charges that can be brought, those criminal charges need to be brought, because a criminal activity needs to be prosecuted. But on top of that, there are acts that are evil and that need to be exposed and that we need to be able to talk about and change society for the better, to avoid them happening in the future. All of that is without a doubt. And you can only have that proper constructive conversation without immediately going to the conclusion that if an evil act happens, if someone does something that we all agree is evil, that that person immediately is inherently evil, is inherently the devil, and is a monster. Because if that is the way that we're going to go about it, then, you know, all nuance is lost and we will never actually find the solutions that need to be found, which is that complex human beings who are often loving, caring parents towards their children, who are good friends to their friends, who wake up in the morning thinking of themselves as good people, can do horrific, horrific things. And we need to understand why. What allows them to do those horrific things? What allows them to not engage their moral compass at that moment? What allows them to choose money over human suffering? What allows them to choose power over the immorality of abuse? Those kinds of questions require serious conversation that are not allowed in 2025, where extreme tribalism seems to dominate the media and the general discourse.
This seems like a great moment to end today's conversation on the Jeffrey Epstein files. If you have any questions, comments, or you heard a mistake that we've made throughout the episode, please make sure to send us an email to thewesternbubble@gmail.com, and we will try to incorporate them in our following episodes. Thank you very much for listeners for joining us today. Make sure to join us again next week when we burst the Western bubble. Next week, by the way, being our final episode of the summer. Be excited because it will be a good one. That is from my side. Balder, which closing quote did you pick for us today?
Well, talking about complexity, I chose a quote from Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who was a French Jesuit and scientist, but also with a little bit of a, let's say, morally iffy track record when it comes to certain issues. But that doesn't mean that we can't quote him. And this is a quote that shows exactly the problem where humanity, if things go well, would embrace complexity and become more and more aware of who we are. But unfortunately, at the moment, we're doing a U-turn and we're turning towards greater simplicity. And therefore, we should doubt the sustainability of our human future. And the quote goes, "Humanity is still advancing, and it will probably continue to advance for hundreds of thousands of years more, always on condition that we know how to keep the same line of advance as our ancestors towards ever greater consciousness and complexity."